we get all philosophical and computational today with our guest Stephen Wolfram, founder and CEO of Wolfram Research, creator of Mathematica, the Wolfram Alpha, Wolfram Language, and author of A New Kind of Science. We'll discuss artificial intelligence, Siri, and its applications to education. This is the Harvard EdCast. So computational knowledge, that is the subject of the day. And I remember back to when I was growing up in school, I took a computer class. And in computer class, it was relegated to not coding, not Scratch, none of that stuff. It was how to play Oregon Trail, turn off and turn on the computer. A lot has changed since those early days.
That tells me how old you are.
Yes. It gives that away a little bit, the Oregon Trail part and the learning the computers. But, you know, I think about computational knowledge and computational literacy, and I think of all the friends that I have that are having kids in the school system. And I wonder where computational literacy fits into our school curriculums, into what teachers are preparing our students for, or whether it's not doing that and why right. It's important.
Well, so, I mean, right, the whole notion of computation as an important paradigm for dealing with the world, it's kind of a defining feature of the 21st century. It isn't mostly yet in education. I mean, the thing to think about, you know, for any field X, you know, from archaeology to zoology, there either is now a computational X, or there will be, and it will probably be the defining direction for these fields. And those are the careers, those are the directions that we should be, you know, having students learn for. Now, we're not doing that yet. Part of the problem has been a lack of technology, a lack of the right kind of technology, and part of the problem has been, well, school is very full already, and how can we teach more? Now, the thing to understand is, at any moment in history, there's a certain amount of knowledge that is worth teaching the humans, and there's another part of knowledge which is should be automated. I mean, we don't learn, you know, how to flint knap. We don't learn how to do things with quill pens anymore because that stuff has all been sort of submerged by technology. I think the question is what makes sense to actually teach now and how does one fit it in? I think the thing to really understand, the sort of key skill, I think, is this idea of computational thinking. What is computational thinking? It's a little different from writing computer code. Writing computer code is kind of the mechanics of using a computer. Computational thinking is kind of how do you formulate thoughts so that you can communicate them to sort of an arbitrarily smart computer? How do you take the things which are the things you want to do, the questions you might have about the world, the things you want to achieve, and how do you formulate them in a way so that a computer can help you do them? And that's something where, you know, for me, I've been building tools for making computers do stuff for a long time. And, you know, the responsibility of us tool makers is to make things so that as much as possible, the human just gets to define what they want to do, and then us toolmakers automate the actual doing of it by the computer. And we've now pretty recently got to the point, I mean, this is something I've been working on for close to 40 years now, but a long run for the last 30 years of building this thing called the Wolfram language, which is kind of a computational communication language. It's a language where we humans get to communicate what we want to computers as sort of efficiently as possible, and then get the computers to do those things. And so, you know, the point of Wolfram language is that it's a language which already knows a lot of stuff about the world. So it'll know about, Harvard University, or it'll know about the location of all the state capitals in the US, or it'll know about, how you compute what the shortest path is between all those state capitals, or all these kinds of things. And once you have that kind of knowledge in computable form, and when you've defined kind of a language for interacting with that, you've got something where you can kind of inject computational thinking into pretty much any area. So, you know, my theory of it is that, you know, computational thinking should be something that you routinely use as part of any subject you study. Much as, you know, you write essays about lots of different kinds of things. There's a kind of thing I like to call computational essays, which is kind of a thing where it's sort of a mixture of the human defines the narrative, but part of that narrative is kind of a dialogue with the machine that's allowing one to kind of leverage what the machine can do to kind of provide sort of a much higher level of content than a person can provide. So, you know, that's sort of an example I think it's something which should be part of every subject that's taught, not something which has been, I mean, I don't know the dynamics of actual education. Probably there will end up being some kind of computation piece that is sort of the get started on computation thing. I mean, for example, in the case of mathematics, one of the big failures of mathematical education is that, you know, you ask kids, at least in my anecdotal observation, you kids, you know, they study math and you say, did you use the math you learnt for anything else? They look at you, they say, no, of course not. I just did that in a math class. And that's what we don't want to have happen with computational thinking.
And I think that that's probably what's interesting about people are very comfortable in that relationship between the machine and the individual. And asking, I'm sure people listening to this podcast have asked Siri questions, have used the Google Translate component of Google search algorithms. But in a school setting, the relationship between a student and a teacher and a machine from a computational thinking perspective probably hasn't jumped in there yet, and a lot of people complain that the education world is a little bit further behind. But how do you see that cozying up? I know you talked about certain technologies that need to be infused in schools, but perhaps is it down to the pedagogy and the teaching?
Right. So when you ask Siri a question, that's going to our technology to get an answer.
Yeah, Wolfram Alpha,
And you know, Wolfram Alpha is the thing that is sort of routinely used by kids in school to do. You know, well, first it was math homework, chemistry homework, things like that. Occasionally, they also use it to actually ask questions about the world, which plenty of other people do too. But you know, the question, what is new in these recent years is the fact that with Wolfram Language, you know, we built this kind of stack of automation of computation that's to the point where basically the same tools can be used by the fanciest research and development folk around the world and by kids. I mean, this has happened in a bunch of other areas.
It's democratic.
Yes, right. I mean, you know, it happened in video editing. You know, the $100 million movie gets edited by the same tools that random kids will use.
Final Cut, yeah.
Right. And, you know, and that's now happened for computation and computational knowledge. And so then now the question is, okay, so given that this is now possible, given that this tool now exists, what can actually be done in the kind of educational establishment to inject this? I think the thing that I've noticed that's really interesting is, you know, we see people using Wolfram Language and using our technology in schools, and you might think, oh, it'll always be the math and science teachers. It's not. There are plenty of English teachers and history teachers and things like that who see this, and it's not like the coding they were used to. It's not really, it's, you know, coding is a pretty low-level activity. It's something where you're really pandering to the details of how the machine works. It's something where, in many ways, one of the things that I actually have been afraid of is that the emphasis on sort of coding education will be such that the main thing kids will take away from it is the same main thing that they take away from math education, which is math is hard and kind of boring. I mean, not every kid takes that away, but that's the predominant thing. And I think that sort of straight, you know, let's go down to the level of the details of the machine coding has the risk of doing the same thing. What's great about kind of what we can now do and sort of the automation of computation and computational knowledge is that, okay, so pick an area. I don't know, you can pick a domain and we'll talk about it. Pick something a kid might care about and we'll talk about how it gets to be computational.
Right now, pick anything.
Yeah.
Okay. A kid might care about Justin Bieber.
Okay, so here. So you can go to Wolfram Language or Wolfram Alpha and you can say, show me all the songs that Justin Bieber has made, and you can immediately make a timeline of all Justin Bieber's songs, and you can figure out, okay, he was really active at the beginning and then lost interest. Maybe you can get the lyrics to some of these songs, you can make a word cloud of them, you can decide that the most important word for Justin Bieber is now or something, or whatever it is. You know, that would be you might be able to, you probably can't right now get data on the actual musical forms from them, but if you could, you take some song, you can do a bunch of audio processing, these kinds of things. I mean, that's the kind of thing where you can, or you could take probably we have data on Justin Bieber concerts, and you could probably figure out, sure, you know, did Justin Bieber actually follow the shortest path around the cities that he was visiting for his concert tour, or did somebody goof it up?
Interesting. And, you know, you talk about people using Wolfram Language and Wolfram Alpha as for more math and science things. I watched your 2010 TED Talk, and it's, oh, what's the GDP of this country divided by the revenue of Microsoft? That's where it goes. What I found is someone who has recently, you know, been curious with AI or just interacting with machines is the number of times you'll be at a party and someone jokingly will go, Siri, what's the meaning of life? And all of a sudden, philosophy and theology and these sort of matters of humanities, questions of love, truth, beauty, goodness, faith, all of a sudden are being checked in with machines.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I think one of the things that is exciting about kind of the modern development of AI is, you know, AI is our first real example of alien intelligence. So we're building something which is kind of, you know, which has intelligence somewhat similar to our own in many ways. Can talk about, there's lots to say about that. But the thing that's interesting about it is it's intelligence that is not, is distinct in many ways from our sort of historical and biological development. And it's something where it does what it does. We don't necessarily understand the details of what's going on inside. It's something where, you know, I think in the sort of the assumptions about what computers can do, what computers can be used for, will change somewhat. I think the main thing that I think we'll see coming is that the set of things that are possible for us to have happen in the world will dramatically increase, and the main issue will be, so we can do all these things, now what do we want to do? And, you know, the one thing you talk about, you know, you can talk about sort of automating stuff. There are all these jobs. Lots of jobs will get automated. There are lots of jobs where computers will do them better than humans. The question is, what can you not automate? And there's sort of almost by definition a thing you can't automate, which is what do you actually want to do? In other words, what are the goals that you're trying to achieve? Given a set of goals, you may do a good job. You know, us tool builders, together with our AIs and so on, are trying to do a good job getting to the point where, given the goal, we can, as efficiently as possible, get towards that goal. The question then is, so what should the goal be? And, you know, one of the things I've found interesting, one of the issues right now is, you know, with computation, we have a very powerful source of there's this ocean of computation that's capable of doing so many things. The question now is, how do we tell that ocean of computation what to do, what we actually want? And so in my life as a language designer, you know, I see my role as being sort of bridging the what do humans want with what can we get computation to do. And so, you know, right now one of the issues is, you know, we've got AIs, they're getting more powerful, lots of systems in the world, we're going to say, hey, AIs, you're better at running these than humans. One of the questions is, how do you describe to the AIs what globally we want humans, what do we want these AIs to have as their goals? And so one of the things I've been interested in is, how do we extend sort of the idea of a precise language, like Wolfram language, to cover the kinds of things that might be in sort of a constitution for how we want the world to actually work when the world is being effectively run by AIs.
So it's a constitution for AI.
Yes. So, I mean, and that's something where, you know, one of the things that's a sort of popular, and you ask about, you know, where does computation come in? You know, if you're going to be a lawyer of the future, you better know how to write some kind of code, because a lot of contracts are going to be written in code, not in English. I mean, English is a very inefficient way, you know, legal contracts and legalese are kind of a way of describing what you want to have happen in the world. They're a rather crummy way to do that. If only it could be written in pure code, then machines could execute these things and it would be a lot simpler to do lots of kinds of things. And I think that when you're telling an AI what you want it to do, telling it in rather imprecise English is not really going to cut it. And so that's a place where, so, in terms of education, one of the things that I think is interesting, and, you know, you look at the sort of automation of things, the part that isn't getting automated is the part about, so what do you actually want to do? And so when you kind of roll back from that, so what should you teach humans how to do? You don't necessarily need to teach humans how to go sort of inside the engine and figure out how to fix the car, so to speak. You need to figure out, you know, you need to teach the humans how to drive the car or to figure out where they want to drive to and so on. And I think the analogy there is sort of teaching computational thinking is teaching about how do you take what you want and formulate it in such a way that you can have a sufficiently smart, a sufficiently capable computer, AI, whatever, do it. And what you find is that as you start thinking about things in computational terms, it really crispens the way that you think about things in general. Just as, you know, back in the in ancient times, you know, when logic got invented, later on when math became popular, these were kind of structuring mechanisms for how one thinks about things. Computation is sort of a paradigm, is a structuring mechanism for how to think about things, and it's really powerful. And there are lots of things, as it becomes more common in the world for people to be able to do good computational thinking, there'll be lots of kinds of things that can be figured out and that people routinely can figure out that aren't possible today.
So it's the goal setters and the strategists that don't have to worry about their jobs being automated.
I think that's right. I think that's what would be the definition of an automated goal?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when we think about that at a sort of broader philosophical level, I mean, the universe is doing computations. It's doing pretty sophisticated computations, but those computations doesn't do them with a goal, or not a goal that we recognize.
And the question I have is, you talked about setting the constitution within Wolfram language. What is the fear amongst AI is that AI becomes more aware and therefore would want to crumple up the constitution, throw the tea out into the harbor, and do their own thing. It's hard to ask you to predict certain things, but is that an issue that you foresee?
Well, I think the thing is, the universe is a great example of a computationally sophisticated thing, and it just does what it does. And that's the same thing with, you know, a computer system we build, it will just do what it does. And, you know, if you set it up to have a particular goal, it will follow that goal. But most of the time, it just does what it does. I mean, we can describe it as, we can look at what it's doing, and we can say, gosh, just like we can look at a natural process, and we can say, gosh, it looks like that thing is trying to achieve, you know, it looks like the hurricane is trying to do such and such a thing. But really, we have an alternative description, which is just, it's doing what it does based on the laws of physics. And it's the same thing with these computational processes.
So we're going to have the final minute. We're going to have teachers and students and parents and educators whose minds are already blown right now just having listened to you. What is it that they can do when they stop listening to this podcast and go into the school, into their schools tomorrow, into their classrooms, that can, as a tangible takeaway, make their classroom more focused on computational literacy, computational thinking, regardless of the technology in the room?
Right. Well, we're trying to make technology. I mean, you know, if you, our Wolfram Language thing, and we have a thing we're calling a Computational Thinking Initiative, which is an attempt to sort of deliver that as broadly as possible, in particular the K-12 world. I wrote a little book called Elementary Introduction to Wolfram Language. These are places to start. I mean, what I found is that about age 11 or 12, kids seem to be able to start, you know, writing Wolfram Language, and they get quite proficient. In fact, the scariest thing for me is running into 11-year-olds who can speak Wolfram Language, which is very hard for me to understand. Like, they can speak computer language.
What's a quick example of that?
I don't know. I'm not very good at speaking it. You know, nest list, hash, wedge, hash, ampersand, such and such thing.
Okay.
And then
we'll check with Siri on that later.
Yes, right. It should understand it. That is the thing, and that is the language in which it is programmed.
So Siri is an it, not a she. Okay, go ahead.
It's right. It's for now. But I think concretely, the thing that is really exciting right now is computational thinking. We've gotten the tools to the point where this can be broadly done, and you know, for better or worse, the tool set that I've built over the last 30 years, for reasons that had nothing to do directly with education, had to do with supporting the world's sort of research and development community, happens to be the sort of unique thing that has gotten us to the point where it's possible for kids to have access to this kind of computational power. And you know, the thing now is, it seems to really work. I mean, it seems to be the case that kids can learn this stuff, and it's pretty neat, because you'll end up with a 13, 14-year-old where you tell them some question about the world, and they'll start typing, and they'll be figuring out, you know, they'll be generating infographics that show the answer, and they'll figure out a bunch of stuff. And it's not, you know, this is a new thing. I mean, kids have not traditionally been able to go and figure out adult level, so to speak, stuff about the world. And this is something that is now possible. And, you know, I think we kind of owe it to future generations to get them to the point where this is something they routinely do. And, you know, we now have the technology to do this. The challenge, I mean, from an education point of view, I should say one of the interesting challenges, one of the things I like to do is live coding and live experiments where you just go and start exploring something, you don't know where it's going to go. That's a slightly different kind of teaching modality than what people are used to, where the teacher knows everything, because the fact is the computer is going to do stuff and bring in knowledge that the teacher doesn't have, where it's just like, oh, that's interesting. And you know, that's something that I think is empowering for kids, at least that's been my observation about it. It's something which one has to sort of adapt to in terms of sort of educational process.
You mentioned the book. Obviously, where can people learn more about the work that you're doing? If they want to follow up on this, you have a blog, you have a podcast yourself.
Yes. Well, I mean, yes, you can find stephenwolfram.com. That's about me. And wolfram.com, that's about my company and all the various things we do. And you'll find on wolfram.com, for example, there's an immediate access button for a thing called Wolfram Programming Lab, which is kind of a free, immediate, online version of Wolfram Language that has a bunch of activities for kids, and is also linked to my book, which is also free online. It seems to be a good place to start. There have been a bunch of kids over the last couple of years who have really launched. I mean, the thing that for me is exciting is when kids can get to the point where once they have thought of something, they can spontaneously on their own turn the thing they're thinking about into something where they can do a computation based on it and get an answer to the question they were asking.
Sir, it is an honor. This has been the Harvard EdCast, a production of the Harvard Graduate School of Education. Thank you kindly for listening.